Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, members of the BCTGM Local 42 out on strike today in Atlanta. That means now the Nabisco workers in Atlanta who went out today will join those who went out in Portland, those who went out in Aurora, Colorado, those who went out in Richmond, Virginia, and Chicago. All tonight are on strike against Nabisco. And look, this is something I've been saying should have happened 20 years ago. Workers should have taken a stand as companies were shipping jobs overseas and down to Mexico and destroying working conditions. This is something that should have happened decades ago. And fortunately, right now, there's an opportunity, and the workers are saying, you know, we've had enough of it. And here to share some thoughts on just how bad it is and well, what's going on, I've asked Alex Press to come talk with us. Alex is a staff writer over at Jacobin Magazine. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on.
So tonight we got five facilities for Nabisco out on strike. The most recent, Atlanta. Why?
Yeah, so that's a distribution center for Nabisco just outside of Atlanta. They walked off the job too. And this is because contract negotiations are ongoing and sort of dragging on. These are pattern agreements. So they're identical contracts for each of these different locations across the country. And the company is actually Mondelez International. That's what produces the Nabisco snacks that everyone's familiar with, you know, Oreos, Chips Ahoy, Nutter Butter. And so they are sort of sick of the concessions that the company is proposing. And so, as you mentioned, started in Portland on August 10th, workers walked off the job, and it's quickly spread across the country.
Now, this isn't just, you know, Nabisco now. I mean, I go back, you know, the Oreo for, you know, several years ago. I haven't bought a bag of Oreos, I can't tell you how long, simply because of how bad the workers have been treated in Chicago and Philadelphia and other places as they close down plants. Now they close down plants in New Jersey. And I think also in Atlanta as well, if I'm not mistaken. This is finally, I think, people going, enough of the poor working conditions, enough of the poverty wages, but also enough of the job loss.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, though, these, I think the similarity these workers share across these locations is that they're coming out of the pandemic, right, which is a really important context for all the stuff that you're seeing and will see going forward in the next year or so, is that people have been pushed to the brink. So in food production industry, at the manufacturing level, you know, workers have been working so hard through the pandemic. You know, you didn't often see anything about it because these weren't the sort of like what was considered the essential workers, right? These weren't necessarily healthcare workers. But, you know, snacking is up in the United States. We're all stuck inside, right, during the pandemic. And so these companies have been pushing their workers and they haven't been hiring new people. So workers at Nabisco, just like people at Frito-Lay, for example, at the recent strike and all sorts of places that don't even have unions, are being forced into overtime. So they're working 80-hour weeks. That's what people in Chicago, for example, were saying, is that they're working 80-hour weeks and they won't put up with it. As you mentioned, you know, in Chicago, they also have this history that the Nabisco plant there on the south side of Chicago, you know, is this institution in the community. It pays almost $30 an hour. It's one of the few places to make a living wage on the south side of Chicago. A ton of Black workers, right? This is a really important institution in the community. And in 2016, Nabisco offered them a really horrible ultimatum, which was accept what was basically a 60% cut in pay and benefits or accept mass layoffs. And of course, the workers refused. That's a ridiculous question. 60% cut in your pay is just impossible. And so Nabisco laid off some 500 workers and did build up its production facilities in Mexico. Now, I think it's important to note because it's, you know, it's not a question necessarily of like nationalism here. You know, Mexican workers get paid so little because they're subject to, you know, pretty much faux unions, right? You know, the company chooses what union to enforce a contract with, and the workers have a lot of trouble organizing there, and that's how they end up getting paid so little. So, you know, the union BCTGM that represents Nabisco workers has been in touch to some extent with those workers in Mexico, but again, like this, you know, the amount of strength that's needed to combat this sort of offshoring of jobs is just, you know, very far from where these workers are at right now.
Especially when you're talking about I would argue that the Mexican government isn't free of corruption and grift and all of the things that go along. So there's no enforcement, even if you could. And look, right now our trade agreement has a little language to force independent unions. But you got to go through, fight that, and then have a dog with some teeth that are actually going to enforce it.
Right. And again, you know, this company, Nabisco, and its ownership, Mondelez International, have no interest in that, right? They just want to enforce, you know, cut the labor costs, have skyrocketing profits. That's what they've seen. They've seen huge profits over the past year with the pandemic, and the workers haven't gotten a dime of that. And instead, they've risked their health. There have been outbreaks in these facilities of COVID. And again, they're working against 16-hour shifts. So you come in for an eight, and when you finish your eight, your boss tells you you're working another eight right now. Just imagine dealing with that. You have kids, you call your husband, you say, hey, actually, I can't take care of the kids. Suddenly your husband can't work because he has to take care of the kids. It's a disaster. And it's completely impossible to live under those conditions if you're doing that every single day.
Yeah. Now I had someone go, well, you're getting paid overtime for it. What's the big deal? The big deal is you know, you're working 80 hours a week every week. Eventually it gets to be not just taxing on your family, as you pointed out, but also on your health.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, we saw this with the Frito-Lay strike in Topeka, Kansas, that the workers openly talked about how there were suicides, there were divorces, there were fights on the shop floor, because imagine the amount of stress and strain you're under at hour 15. All of a sudden your coworker isn't working as fast as you want them to, or he says something to you. You know, you're very quick to just lose it, right? People are losing their minds working these shifts. It's a huge problem.
Yeah, especially, you know, as you pointed out, you know, the pandemic hasn't made these things earlier, these things easier. And yet these workers, you know, they weren't necessarily, you know, the ones that we applauded as the here frontline heroes and essential, but they were for, you know, like it or not, the snacks and the things, the food, the prepared foods that came out helped people get through the last year and a half, whether we want to admit it or not.
Right. And part of the tension here is that, and this was true when I talked to people at Frito-Lay, the workers there who went on strike last month, was they see that their management gets to go home to their families, or their management has air conditioning, whereas the factory shop floor is hot. And they feel this sense of tension of like, you know, our bosses are safe. Our bosses are not worried. Our bosses are not stressing to the point of destroying their lives. And here we are just doing this for the sake of producing snacks. So it gets to you. It's not surprising that we're seeing these strikes happen now.
It's the ultimate, which side are you on? I mean, you know, exactly. in any one of these moments, you have to look at, you know, who's on which side. It's the ultimate. You know, you see the boss with his feet up on the desk in the air conditioner, or worse yet, at home, you know, via Zoom, barking out orders. It's not hard to see who's on which side.
Right. I mean, so I spoke to one of the workers in Chicago who's on strike, and those workers in Chicago joined the strike late Thursday last week, so August 19th. So they were the sort of biggest shop recently to join the strike. And one of the workers said to me, you know, we don't have a problem with working. The problem is that we don't get to go home. How do you call your husband and say, I'm not coming home? That's what our lives are like right now. They treat us like animals, you know, treat us like humans, treat us the way you want to be treated. And she said, you know, we see that management is home with their families when we're working overtime. It's impossible not to see that we're being treated differently, even as companies like Nabisco say we're all one big family. That's not how family treats each other, right? And so people have been pushed to the brink.
Right.
And fortunately, yeah, they're on strike and it's 24/7. The picket line is set up.
No, but here's the thing, and this is where I've had people go, well, why would this company want to spend so much on overtime? You're working 80 hours a week. After 40, no matter where you're at in this country, you still have to pay that premium. Now, I believe their contract has overtime after eight, you know, double time on their or time and a half on their six punch, double time on their seven punch, which is, you know, a massive premium, which I understand they're trying to claw back. But, you know, when you start looking at those numbers, I've had people go, why don't they just hire more people? Why don't they hire more staff?
Right. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people ask that. And to be clear, you know, the contract right now is good on premium pay. They get 1.5, the standard rate for when they work beyond an 8-hour shift. They get 1.5 on Saturdays and they get double pay on Sundays. And that's exactly what Mondelez is trying to get rid of in this new contract. They want what they're calling an alternative work week, where, you know, you're just paid, even if you work a 16, if it's within that first 40 hours, it's not overtime. And they want to get rid of that premium pay on the weekends completely, right? So workers are saying this could cost them $10,000 a year for some of them. I've actually seen numbers even higher than that from other workers. And people ask, you know, that's a ton of money the company is spending on overtime, at least for now. But the thing is, when a company in a tight labor market like this is looking around and thinking about hiring new workers, they're going to have to attract those workers and pay them benefits. You know, this is a union shop, even as many problems as exist, despite it being a union shop. These workers still get benefits. You know, those are costs beyond wages. And they also have the cost of hiring and finding people in the first place and then training them, right? These jobs do take training. They do take a hiring process, and companies don't want to spend that money. So it's not a straight calculation of, am I spending more on wages than I would if I just hired new workers? It's actually all the other things that come with hiring new workers. And employers, not just at Nabisco, but across a variety of industries right now, are instead preferring to go with mandatory overtime. And that's what's leading to all these complaints about 14 and 16 hour days at all sorts of places.
Yeah, but here's the thing. And look, I've been in those situations where I've worked 12, 14. One time I worked 36 straight hours. I know after the first 8, 10, productivity starts to decline. By the 12th hour, it's taken a dive. By 16, it's in the tank. By 24, you're getting nothing out of me. What incentive is for the company to keep you there as productivity and safety and all of the things go down and all the negatives come up? Quality control has to go down. So as a consumer, I got to tell you, I'm a little concerned of the products that are coming out now that I know that, half of the products are probably produced by people who are in their, 12th, 14th, 16th hour. I got to wonder about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, especially at not just Nabisco, but all sorts of sort of industrial level food processing. I mean, slaughterhouses, famously, in this way, people are overworked and all of a sudden they're not being careful with food. And that's how you get outbreaks. I've reported even on the sort of end of the supply chain, say Chipotle, for example. Workers all the time there tell me that there's a reason that Chipotle has all these food outbreaks. They have all these illnesses. It's because workers are overworked and they don't have time to wash their hands. They know that they don't have time to take the safety measures. And everyone's falsifying the records here about staffing and employment even at Chipotle shops. And so, yeah, it's totally a consumer problem, too. You don't want people making your food who haven't slept in days. I mean, that just seems very clear. But these companies are also pretty clear about denying that that's a problem, right? And so, you have workers telling you that they're afraid they're going to fall asleep on the assembly line, and they're telling you the truth, but companies will deny that that's a problem.
Now, is there anything that the Department of Labor could do? I mean, we're right now, and I've said this before, I think Joe Biden is the most pro-union president in my lifetime. And that's not saying an awful lot, for the past presidents we've had. But he is the most pro-union president, the most pro-worker president in my lifetime. Is there anything this administration is doing, can do, anything the BCTGM wants them to do? Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I'm not sure that there's a straight answer, right? I mean, the variety of sort of things on display here with both the Department of Labor and also, say, the PRO Act at the legislative level, things that would strengthen unions and workers' rights would inevitably help these issues. But it is entirely within a company's legal rights to force overtime. There have been attempts, and actually, I think there's been one successful pass at a local level to ban the practice of mandatory overtime. And that would be another approach that would stop this sort of thing. Workers, some of them want overtime, but to be forced into another 8 after your first 8, I think most people would agree that that's unjust and shouldn't be allowed, right? Especially as just a cost saving measure by a company that doesn't want to hire a new worker. So there are things that can be done. But again, I mean, the important thing for people to realize is that it's legal to make someone work 80 hours. And that's a big problem, right? I mean, and the FLSA, like a big legislative effort long ago, in part was about trying to, sort of create labor standards here that would make it profitable for a company to hire a new person instead of working someone overtime. But that didn't really factor in benefits and all the other costs of hiring and training. And so companies now end up doing this cost calculation, and it costs human lives in the process. I mean, that's what these people are dealing with. You can't work 80 hours, especially if you're on the older side of things, without it really doing damage to your health.
Yeah, and this is one of those that goes back to a question, an old Romanian guy asked me, do you work to live or live to work? And, it's a simple question. These four poor folks seem like they're living just to work.
Right. I mean, this is a horrible thing. I think it's beyond just Nabisco. This question that I think a lot of people are increasingly asking themselves after the pandemic, which is, why is my entire life work? I think a lot of people did get to experience what having free time was like, whether they were forced off into unemployment or otherwise had additional benefits from the state that gave them the opportunity to pursue other things. And they realize that they don't want to work until they die. And so there's a reason that hours and control over scheduling is becoming such a point of contention at so many places. I mean, Nabisco especially, but all sorts of industries. I mean, I recently wrote about the film industry and workers there too, many of whom do manual labor on film sets, are working 14-hour shifts, 16-hour shifts, and then getting in car crashes on the way home because they're so tired. And they're saying, this is my entire life and it's not worth it. To make a movie, it might be fun. It might be glamorous. I might love it. But at the end of the day, what if I want to have a family? What if I want to fall in love? What if I want to raise kids? can't do it with a 16-hour day.
No, you're right on. And this is where we do need policy, but we also need unions strong enough to make sure that that doesn't happen. And you know, we're in this position where unions have been so weakened that they really haven't had the strength to stop. I mean, we fought for the 8-hour day, 140 years ago? And, you know, not much has improved, you know, on that front since. In fact, you know, obviously, as we've found out, things are rolling backwards. So where do you see this going, you know, with the last question I've got for you? This is the fifth facility. Are there more going to come online, do you see, in the coming days? How big can this get? And are they talking? And is there a way to solve this?
Yeah, I mean, the way it can be solved, at least at Nabisco, is, of course, if Nabisco can accept that the workers don't want any more concessions. You know, they're currently in contract negotiations. I haven't gotten confirmation. You know, I'd heard that they were meeting today, that Nabisco had called up the BCTGM and said, we want to talk. I don't know exactly what the schedule of those talks are. But, you know, the workers are very clear. They do not want their overtime taken away. They do not want another issue here is that newer workers, Mondelez International wants to slot them into a worse healthcare plan. Create two tiers of healthcare for workers, right? That's another thing they do not want. There's a question about pensions being taken away or reinstated. So, you know, Mondelez can recognize that this is not the time for workers to accept concessions, that workers have been through a lot and have made the company a ton of money, and the company can afford to cover them, as one worker told me. You know, they have the money to cover healthcare. There's no reason that they should be pushing to take that away. And so I think it's a very easy solution. You know, it's not like this company is unprofitable in any sense. And fortunately, I think it's important to underline that the workers are doing exactly what it takes to win that, which is saying, you know, we're done and walking off the job and doing it together in a way that's spread so that they're not geographically isolated. You know, the stewards at these shops are in communication all the time. They're supporting each other. And, you know, I think it helps that the public has, you know, they're having a lot of support. People recognize that this is unjust. Public sentiment, I think, is on the side of workers right now. I mean, mostly because the public itself, all of us are being overworked too. So we recognize ourselves, even if we're not working 80-hour weeks in an assembly line. You know, the workers are on the right side of this. And so I think it's very clear that the answer in this problem, in this dispute, is for Mondelez to accept the workers' demands and, you know, bargain a fair contract.
No, and you're absolutely right. I hope folks will check out your work. You do fabulous stuff over at Jacobin Magazine. We'll get stuff out. Alex Press, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a good night.
You know, again, I come back to this. You know, I've been calling for more strikes for quite some time. This seems to be moving us in the right direction. And we'll see how this plays out. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.